to Anna Henderson in Canberra, Chief Political Correspondent with SBS World News. Anna, welcome back to the show.
David, I'm ready to go, and I believe I'm wearing an Akubra tonight, just, you know, so that we can all imagine how deeply engaged I am in the future of the Nationals.
We are going to talk Nats and Matt today, Nats and Matt, because this week Matt Canavan became head of the party. What's this going to mean? I mean, can Matt Canavan win a single vote in the city? And doesn't he have to in order for the coalition to work?
I'm not sure that he does. There's a possibility that you have the loose idea of a coalition and a coalition agreement, that secret agreement between the Nationals and the Liberals about the future, but that there is at the moment a fairly clear understanding, I think, from many of the Liberals, that the Nationals are going to have to do their thing in the regions because they're fighting off potential challenges from One Nation. Whether One Nation continues to be a force, as per the opinion polls, up until the next election, or if there are flame outs at the moment, like, the Liberal Party does, in the main, I think, have a bit of an understanding that the Nationals have their own fight to have. And it's better if the Nationals do have that fight on policy without having to be drawn into issues that could lose them like country seats. And so there is a sense that perhaps there can be a differentiation, that the parties do campaign on relatively separate issues, and the Liberals are able to do something in the cities that the Nats don't do in the country. But because there had been so many permutations of this now and the ructions between the two parties, they've kind of agreed it's better for them to be in a loose alliance than One Nation to be in an alliance at this point. So I think a lot has changed over the time that we've been discussing these issues over the last year or so. And now there's sort of an acknowledgement, you know, that Liberals in city seats are just going to have to wear the fact that the Nationals are going to do things that are going to cause trouble for them. That's life.
But that means asking city folk to vote for a coalition, one party of which is led by a person who is absolutely hostile to doing anything about climate change, an absolute spruiker for coal. How can that possibly work?
Well, I mean, it's yet to be seen, isn't it? But I think those really inner city and quite teal seats now that have had a battle over, you know, whether or not climate change is going to be a priority or not, I don't think they're really in the sights of Angus Taylor in the short term. I think he's looking more to the suburbs. He's looking more to small business suburbs and places where One Nation's actually getting quite a lot of traction as well, as to how the Liberal Party can win back, you know, eyeballs and voters in those areas. And he doesn't really need to have a battle about climate change in those seats. According to polling that's been done sort of seat by seat, it's not something that people are largely, you know, I'm stereotyping here, but just based on these focus groups and opinion polls, not particularly exercised about big picture climate change at the moment. The big issues in those seats are definitely sort of economic prosperity or economic pressure, and issues around infrastructure pressure as well. And those questions about, you know, climate policy are not really ones that are being raised regularly in those focus groups. So if you are a Liberal Party looking at that big suburban and outer suburban belt and then the country, it's possible to have a quite different approach to policy than if you're trying to win back, say, Wentworth, Kooyong, those kinds of seats.
But Anna, the policy of going for those suburban seats hasn't worked either.
I mean,
they haven't got the teal seats, the really prosperous heartland seats of the Liberal Party. They're gone. But they haven't picked up these, you know, supposedly low-hanging fruit of outer suburban seats. They haven't gone to the coalition either.
Well, as one Liberal put to me the other day, maybe we haven't had the right salesperson and the right friendly face.
But isn't
that... And maybe
that,
now we do.
But isn't that it? That the hope is that the salesman will come along, that will convince Australians to vote for policies that they have long opposed because this brilliant salesman would come along. So how good is Matt Canavan at selling, you know, coal, amongst other things?
I think he is pretty good at selling it. And he seems to have a sort of level of cut through that David Littleproud has kind of struggled with. I mean, David Littleproud, you know, it was quite a surprise that he decided to step back as Nationals leader last week. And it's quite unclear exactly what went into the decision-making process for him, other than he said he was just extremely exhausted by everything that had come before and all the infighting with the Liberal Party and with Susan Lee as Liberal leader.
Hey, just while we're here, in parentheses, the two Barrys,
yes,
Tony Barry and Barry Cassidy, were discussing the possibility that the figures for the National Party in the upcoming by-election for Susan Lee's old seat, which is still some weeks away, but the figures for the Nationals were so diabolical, single figures, that they were going to finish Littleproud off anyway. So he's gone before he was pushed. What do you think of that theory?
Yeah, I think there's merit to that argument. As soon as we were standing at the press conference and David Littleproud was announcing that he was resigning, I sort of thought, well, it's something you might do to save a legacy if you're going to face another spill in sort of 6 weeks, 7 weeks' time and unceremoniously be booted out. And maybe out of this process, he did a bit of a deal to retain some kind of front bench portfolio. In the end, he's been handed an, it's quite brutal, but like an outer shadow ministry role. So he's not in shadow cabinet. But perhaps, you know, if he said he was really exhausted by all this process, it's maybe not something that he had the gumption to continue with, and Matt Canavan had to reward all the people who supported him for the leadership in some ways. But yeah, I think the Farah by-election would have been, you know, at least in his mind. And then the reality that if he was to try and hold on to the leadership up until the next election, and then the Nationals really were given a drubbing, that, you know, like that would be his legacy. His legacy would be sort of running the Nationals into the ground.
Yep.
But, you know, Matt Canavan, he hasn't even been in the shadow ministry. Like, he's been sort of languishing in this backbench position, just sort of biding his time, making tons of social media videos, and I assume just sort of preparing for the moment where he might strike while the iron was hot. And he hasn't had to because, you know, largely, I mean, yes, there was a contest for the leadership between him, Kevin Hogan, and Bridget McKenzie, but, you know, he had the numbers in the end. And I think more people believe that he would be able to take the fight to Pauline Hanson and his former boss, Barnaby Joyce.
Ha. But isn't that a return to an old understanding of the National Party, that One Nation is not to be toyed with? It is the enemy. You have to fight it. And that spirit seems to come back with Canavan.
He's ready for the fight. And he sort of energised One Nation in some ways as well. They're saying, oh, we're more excited about the contest now. But there is also, I think, this critical meeting of the policy minds in some ways between, you know, some of the things that Matt Canavan and Barnaby Joyce actually are in furious agreement on, and therefore Pauline Hanson. There was a time when people were wondering whether Matt Canavan was going to just defect to One Nation as well. But there's obviously the difference that he's promoted, Senator Canavan, and sees, which is that the Nationals, in his view, are still in a position to be part of a government and to get things done, to make policy, to genuinely deliver for a community, as opposed to, at this point, One Nation, which has never actually been in a position to, you know, direct money or funding in any area. It's been a party of protest and grievance. So Matt Canavan's decided to put his money on remaining in the Nationals and trying to make them more viable.
And very interesting, as a deputy leader of the Nationals, Darren Chester. Now, that seems, on the face of it, incongruous. You've got the most old-fashioned pro-coal leader, and you've got Darren Chester, who's a different piece of work entirely.
It was an interesting combo. It wasn't what I was expecting to come out of that party room. I mean, I think we were largely expecting Canavan would be walking out of there victorious. I mean, there were some who said, you know, Bridget McKenzie might have more appeal to a broader cross-section of the regional community, particularly because she's, you know, done a lot of television media and, you know, she's quite well known. And also someone who might appeal more to women in the bush as well, by virtue of the kind of policies that she often talks about. However, in the end, Darren Chester, Gippsland MP, someone who has, you know, in the past sort of distanced himself from Nationals policies at time, hasn't been afraid to speak out even when he was in government. If he didn't agree with the government on a policy, he's managed to end up in this position. I think he's quite chuffed about it, and he sees maybe that he and Matt Canavan can be a bit of a yin and yang in some ways within the party. But it definitely means that the internal politics of the Nationals has shifted for him to be elevated in that deputy role.
And meanwhile, Barnaby, shyly, you know, in a splutter of contradictions and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, wearing his hat, and of course you're right, all hat and no cattle, how could I say acres, has slightly distanced himself from Pauline, because Barnaby knows at least one or two good Muslims.
It's a signal. It certainly is a signal within the Nationals. So Barnaby departs from the Nationals, and he carves out a position within One Nation where he is sort of deferential to Pauline Hanson as the leader and sees them as having this really strong chance of being able to peel off votes nationwide and do something substantial with that polling that they're shifting in their direction. But it's also a signal from Barnaby Joyce to Pauline Hanson that he has a different take on some of the more extreme politics of Pauline Hanson. And so, you know, while she will go into the Senate wearing, you know, a burqa type apparel for a stunt and talk about Muslim Australians, of which there are, you know, 700,000 or 800,000 Australians who identify as Muslim, and she will sort of denigrate that religion and culture, question it, and say, you know, that there's something that people who abide to that culture have to answer for. Barnaby Joyce, on the other hand, will try to reshape a One Nation narrative that says that he's not prepared to be that extreme, and that he's party that he's now joined has to move with him. So we'll see where that lands, because the party is not just Pauline Hanson, though she is, of course, the most visible and vocal part of the movement. Whether or not in the next few months we start to see any moderation of Pauline Hanson's rhetoric, and we'll see who out of the two of them is winning that power struggle.
Anna, thank you for joining us once again on Late Night Live.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll be discussing this for many more months, and we'll see what happens.
All the way to the polls. Thanks, Anna.